Blog Talk Radio.
This is the Horse Radio Network.
What a beautiful day for horses in the morning.
Well, good Wednesday morning, everybody. I am Glenn the Geek from Ocala, Florida.
And I'm Jamie Jennings from Phoenix, Arizona, and you're listening to Horses in the Morning on the Horse Radio Network for November 28th, 2012, episode 540. Good morning, Horse World.
Big Wednesday, the day you face your own biggest challenge, the day you risk it all, the day you either distinguish yourself or fade into the crowd.
Hang on, we're hitching a ride.
Daddy, I want another pony.
I put 40 hours in this weekend, man, it's only Wednesday. I've been cutting this damn heat all day long, there's got to be another way. So I pick up my guitar and I ride a song. Everybody hears and they sing along. Hey, hey, it's a...
Happy Thanksgiving, Merry Christmas, everybody. I did not get to talk to y'all after Thanksgiving, so I'm still in the holiday spirit. I just got back yesterday from my trip to visit the in-laws and the in-family, so it was good. I'm back. I'm glad to be back here at the farm, but I got to tell you a secret. Glenn, are you ready?
Yeah, I'm ready.
Okay, this is not going to work for you, sadly,
okay.
But it's going to work for many women out there. Dude, if you're pregnant over Thanksgiving, everybody encourages you to eat. Like, I mean, you're already eating. You're already eating, but, like, every night at, like, 11 o'clock, we watch a movie, the movie be over, and I would make a sandwich. And you know what? My mother-in-law would make it for me. If I wanted a sandwich, what can I put on your sandwich? What can I get you? Would you like fresh sliced tomatoes? Would you like, why, yes, I would. It is 11 o'clock. Oh, wait, hold on. The sandwich is done. It was all vegetables. Clearly, you're going to need some chocolate. You're pregnant. Have some Reese's Pieces. I ate my body weight in Reese's Pieces over the weekend.
You know, and it is nice being pregnant because you're supposed to eat. You know, that's you're supposed to gain weight. You're supposed to eat. It's the one time in your life. Yeah, it doesn't work for me, by the way. Yeah, it's the one time in your life where gaining weight's a good thing.
You know what? Like, there's a point, you know, when you eat and you're a woman, or even if you're a dude, I guess. I don't know if you guys do this, but we women walk around, and especially after a big meal, you try to suck it in because you don't want to have that big old pot belly after you eat, you know, like just like to be a slovenly pig and just let your belly hang out and everything. I have a belly and I just get to hang it out. It just hangs out there.
Yeah, we don't worry
and
about
people,
that so much.
Everybody who sees your big old slovenly belly walks up and goes, oh my God, it's so cute. Look at your tummy. And it's like, that's not the baby. That's the food I just ate. Whatever.
That's the midnight sandwich.
Yeah. So just a little secret for you guys today is, even if you're not pregnant over next Thanksgiving, tell them you are. It'll be way better.
That's
awesome.
Funny. All right, Jennifer, what's coming up on today's show?
On today's Well-Fed Wednesday edition, we begin with some wishful thinking on lottery wins, plus horsey headlines, followed up by a hardworking horseman, Craig Johnson, who will be stopping by for a chat about dirt. Yes, dirt. And to round out the morning, the horse.com's horse health report shed some light on equine blindness. And happy Red Planet Day, everyone. Today we celebrate the launch of the spacecraft Mariner 4 in 1964, which brought back the very first ever pictures of Mars. So wear something red, folks.
Well, thank you, Jennifer. Well, I got an email. This is my daily Winnie goes out to Cheryl. She sent an email in, and we get this question quite a bit, and you know we've gone over it before, but I'll go over it for the new listeners. She said, how do I listen to the old episodes of Horses in the Morning? There are only so many on iTunes. That's true. iTunes, we have to limit we have to limit the number that we can put on iTunes. It's their regulation, not ours. So I think there's 50 past episodes there. If we go over a certain amount, they close it down. They don't put any new ones on. So that's why we have to do that. If you want to listen to the past episodes, the easiest way to do it is just go to the website at horsesinthemorning.com, and every past episode is there. You just click on the day you want to listen to and hit the play button, or you can download it from that page as well. So you can download it, put it on your player if that's what you're trying to do. So, Cheryl, thank you for writing. If any of you have questions or things you want to write in about, just send them off to Glenn with two N's at horseradionetwork.com.
All right, this is the last time I'm going to talk about the whole baby thing. But just
yeah, right.
To let you guys today.
Look. Okay.
Just so you guys know, I am supposed to go in for an ultrasound to tell whether it's a boy or a girl today.
Oh, wow, cool. What are you hoping for? Are you hoping girl, he's hoping boy?
You know, it's typically like that. Like, if it's a girl, more likely to like horses. So, awesome. If it's a boy, he's either going to be a reiner or an eventer, one or the other. So, it's win-win. Yeah, either I'm going to force him to ride or she's going to really want to ride and love ponies. Either way, they're getting a pony at about the age of 1.5. but seriously, what I'm going to do, you guys, is I'm going to get the ultrasound. We're going to have a contest. Now, this is only if this actually works, because they said it's 90% guaranteed that they can find the sex from the baby today at 13 weeks. So, apparently it's usually 20 weeks, but if the baby's in the right position. Huh?
You are not waiting, are you? When you said you wanted to know, you didn't want to surprise you. You weren't kidding.
Dude, life is surprising enough, okay? Let me just tell you that. So there's no surprises associated with this whatsoever. 13 weeks, I'm in. Tell me what it is. I got to know. I got a plan. So apparently they can tell me today, and if I find out today, I'm going to post the ultrasound on our Facebook page, and you guys have to guess. I'm not going to tell you one way or the other. You have to guess whether it's a boy or girl, and I'll tell you if you're right on Friday's show.
Okay. That sounds like fun.
Are we going to go through the whole polling thing again?
Yeah.
please label it clearly.
Yeah.
Yes,
make sure there's no little hooves on it or anything, because apparently your last ultrasound caused some confusion.
Well, Glenn posted my ultrasound last time. The whole, like, this is how I just kind of told the world that I was in full, was that I posted a photo of the ultrasound and was like, this just got real, people. And Glenn reposted on the Horses in the Morning page. For those who don't listen but do follow us on Facebook, they thought that when Glenn said Jamie's in full, they thought that it was actually a horse ultrasound. And comments were made such as, oh, my gosh, I can see the long face, or, wow, look at those nice, powerful-looking haunches. And I'm like, this is a baby, people. The comments were unbelievable. And then even some of our listeners, who I guess had not listened to the show, thought that maybe it was an ultrasound of Zenyatta's new baby.
I was wondering how you felt as people were saying, oh, look, it looks like four little hooves in there. I was going, you know what? If Jamie's carrying a foal for real, we're going to be millionaires. We're good to go.
There is something that has been very disturbing going on at her farm. It's just wrong, Glenn. It's just wrong. It is a human. And I will let you know on Friday whether it's a boy or girl. You can cast your votes. Now, there may be today, they may say, sorry, we couldn't tell. And, you know, I'll have to wait till 20 weeks and I'll pull my hair out. So one or the other, we'll let you know.
Have you started buying anything yet? Have you bought little clothing, or you're just waiting to hear the sex first?
Oh, dude, listen, being at my mother-in-law's with the 5 grandchildren she already has, and she has all the attic space, so all we did all weekend was go through the attic and pick out the gender-neutral clothing for infants, and I brought all of those home. I was given maternity clothes where I swear to God, if I'm ever that huge to fit into the pants that I was given, oh, that's awful. Oh, my God, they're huge. Like, you hold them up, and it's like one of those Weight Watchers commercials. I used to look like this, and then they're huge pants. And now I look like this.
So are you, did this visit make you get into more being a mommy and having a baby, and you're getting used to the whole idea a little bit more now?
I think I'm getting better just because I actually am getting a belly. so, you know, it's like you can't ignore it for – you can only ignore it for so long before it just catches up with you. So I did have one of those. I know nothing about babies, Glenn. Nothing. I'm 35 years old. I've never changed a diaper, ever. So I went to my sister-in-law, and she's like, do you want to go shopping? I was like, you know what I want to do? I did register at Target. I said, here's what I want to do. I want you to go to the store with me and tell me what everything is. Did you know that baby bottles have different nipples on them, Glenn? Different nipples on baby bottles. Pacifiers have different mouth shapes. You have to figure out which pacifier your baby likes. And did you know that when you start feeding your baby, there's foods for 1, 2, and 3 months old? It's ridiculous the amount of stuff you have to learn. I took Chad yesterday. I'm like, we need a car seat. And I'm like, this is a car seat. They have to be until they're 35 pounds. And then once they graduate from 35 pounds, they're 35 to 50. They're in this car seat. And then they have to go to the booster seat. Oh, my God. I don't know how poor people have kids. Like, I'm not rich. This is going to cost me a fortune. Fortune.
I think the only two people – we're laughing because I think the only two people that know less about babies than you is us. I think we – you know, Jennifer only has baby – you know, most kids grow – I don't know how you were, but most kids, you know, especially girls, not boys so much, but most girls grow up having had babysat on occasion for people, you know, to make money and stuff. Jennifer babysat her first child, her nephew, babysat her first child when you were, what, 40? For an hour and a half? And we all thought baby was going to be dead.
That
we
wasn't
really
babysitting. That wasn't babysitting. That was every freaking buddy left the house and didn't tell me they were leaving.
Yeah.
I was the only one left standing.
She was the only one there for an hour and a half with the baby. And the baby survived, I'll have you know, but we have never changed the diaper either. So we're in there with you, Jamie. We can relate.
All right. Good. So when I go, okay, I can't take it anymore, I'm giving it to you guys. I'm selling
yeah, that
it
won't
to
help.
You. Like, I'm Craigslisting it.
That won't help. Hey, a couple things before we get off. We'll get off of babies and on to shows. Go ahead. Sorry.
I was going to say, I didn't babysit either, Jennifer. Don't feel bad. I fed on the weekends for money at the local stable, so yeah. I didn't babysit either.
See, the amazing part, Jamie, is neither of us feel bad about having never babysat, do we? We don't feel
we
miss out on anything.
You guys, actually, though, you do babysit. You're just babysitting a little bit older children when the parents drop them off at the barn and go, we'll be back in 4 hours. You really are babysitting in a way.
I thought you were referring to us babysitting our husbands.
That too. All right, on with the show. Really bad ads this week is a Redmond Rock.
Thank you.
Yeah, go ahead. Yeah, cheer for yourself. Redmond Rock Gift Pack, and that'll be on Friday. We'll be giving away the Redmond Rock Gift Pack. We all love Redmond Rocks. Our horses love Redmond Rocks. They are the mineral rock with over 60 different minerals. They're all natural. They're not processed bricks. They come out looking like a rock. And that is what we're giving away this week. They have the rock on the rope right now that is apparently selling very well, where they took a Redmond rock, drilled a hole in it, and put it on a rope so it hangs up in your stall so you don't need to put it in a bucket, which is kind of handy. So they're giving those out this week to the winner of Really Bad Ads. Get yours in to Jennifer at horseradionetwork.com. Get on Craigslist and look for the silly ads. Hey, Hey, you know, we might give something away, too, if somebody can find a funny Christmas ad that has come out now, because now the holiday ad should be popping up. So if you come up with one of those, send that in as well. And I have to ask you, Jamie, did you buy your lottery tickets for the Powerball?
You know, I didn't know about this till you said something before the show. So that is
what?
My job today. Is
You're
I
the only
know
one in America.
I've been in an attic sorting baby clothes, okay? I'm out of touch. I'm in.
Let me tell you. $500 million they expect it to go over today, and they expect it will be higher than that. It may even approach $600 million. They are expecting to sell 6.3 million tickets an hour today, all the way to tonight. The lump sum, if it hits a half a billion, the lump sum will be $327 million. After taxes, they estimate about little over $200 million. If you want to take it in an annuity over the next 30 years, you can do that, and you'll get paid out. Let me see here. You're going to get paid out. It came out to $11.6 million a year is what it came out to. So for the next 30 years. Most people take the lump sum. I wonder if anybody ever takes the monthly pay or the yearly payout. I don't know.
That sounds like a good idea. Do you get more?
Oh, it's almost $20 million a year. That's right. It's almost $20 million a year if you paid it out. You know, it would be nice knowing. I mean, it's nice knowing all that's in the bank, but then you got to manage it, and it's all a hassle. This way, you just know you're going to get $20 million a year. You can just – that's kind of nice for 30 years. There have been over 300 jackpot winners over the last 20 years, and that's where they've taken home $11.6 billion in the lottery. Chances of winning, Jamie, are 1 in 175 million. Your chances of getting hit by lightning are 1 in 280,000. So you have about 100,000 better chance of getting hit by lightning than winning, but still ticket sales are $6.3 million an hour. And this is the second biggest lottery ever, unless it goes over $656 million, which was done by the Mega Millions in March. So it's going to be darn close to the largest lottery ever. We've
you know what that tells me?
About five tickets.
Just listen. Listening to your numbers there, that tells me that I would rather buy a lottery ticket and win the lottery than get struck by lightning. So I better go out there, because if I don't, I got a better chance of getting struck by lightning.
I mean, if you're going to have a choice between two, you're absolutely right. If you're going to have a choice between two, just take the lottery.
I'd rather do that. So I'm going out right now. See you later. Bye.
So get your lottery tickets today, everybody. Can you imagine, though, walking away with over $200 million after taxes? That kind of lasts probably a while. You'd have a tough time blowing it all.
You know, thinking about it, like, is there anybody that, say, you go up to the gas station or wherever you buy your lottery tickets, you walk into the store, you say, give me five of the Quick Pick Uber Lotto tickets, and you go back to your car and you sit down and you look at it. Is there one person that doesn't go, okay, here's what I would do? I mean, there's got to be like that moment of like every single person fantasizing about what they're going to do with this money. So that begs the question, oh my gosh, when you sit down in your car to buy that lottery ticket, what is the first thing you say? All right, here's what I'm going to do. Glenn, what do you do?
I already decided we're going on a long cruise, like 2 to 3 weeks, because that way nobody can reach us. We're totally out of touch with everybody. Because can you imagine the phone calls that are going to come in after that?
Like the Greek Isles. You're going to cruise through Greece and the islands.
I was thinking Antarctica.
Yeah. Might as well go for nice weather and good food. I mean,
that's
geez.
True.
You could actually just blast yourself that you now own, so nobody can call you there.
True. But it's true. I mean, think about everybody that's going to come out of the woodwork. And, you know, you got to give it those first couple of weeks to at least die down a little bit. What would you do? What's the first thing you would do? Now that you're having a baby, you're kind of limited.
Yeah, I can't, like, drink.
You can't go out and get drunk. You can't, you probably can't do certain things that you might have done before. But look at the baby toys you could buy.
Oh, dude, forget baby toys. I'm getting a farm. I'm getting the most amazing, beautiful farm on some, like, crazy... You know where, how celebrities own islands? They don't have $500 million. So if they can own an island, I can own an island. I would have to have an island of a farm and horses on it. Who knows what you would do? I would probably just freak out. I mean, hey, what would you do if you had $500 million?
Yeah, that's kind of freak out time. That is definitely freak out time. You know, I have to think a little deeper about it, though, and this is way past what you do in the car. But then I got to thinking, do you know, you can only put if you put money in a bank, it's only insured up to $100,000. So if you had $300 million, where do you put it that it's safe somewhat?
You invest it, my friend. That's why a lot of people get in trouble because they spend it all. I would say I'm going to go with the annuity. And the first thing I'm going to do is find my dream farm. You know those segments we do called Things You'll Never Own? I'm going to own one. And that's where I'm going to go. I'm going to have huge gates. I might get a moat with some alligators, and you'll never find me again.
We are getting a and Jennifer just typed here, you can hire a nanny. You can have two or three nannies, actually.
I'm going to hire some European cute guy to be my nanny, like a manny.
A manny?
Hello, my name is Sven. I am your manny. Oh, my God. And he'd be hot, and then I have a hot pool guy. You know, the sky's the limit with this money, okay?
All right, well.
You know who's going to – you know what? I'm going to – Bruce Davidson Sr. is going to come to my house three times a week and give me private riding lessons. That's what's going to happen.
Hey, we got to move on here because I promised everybody, and Sandy Lovato is waiting to hear, I promised everybody that you would do a review of Life of Pi, which I believe, if I remember correctly, by the text you sent me, did you see that on Thanksgiving Day?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes, I did.
Now, tell us I'm not sure about this movie. We saw the previews for it again, and I'm just going, oh, that looks so stupid. Can you give us, without any spoilers, just a little bit about what the movie is about? Because the previews don't even really give you a clue about that either.
Okay, long story short, you know, there's a lot of kind of religious undertones at the beginning, especially if you read the book, where there's a kid, and he's interested in Muslim religion, Hindu, and Christianity, like Catholicism. And so he kind of goes through this is more in the book. Let me get to the movie. They kind of skip through that part, get it a little bit. It's very funny, the kind of parts that they use. And he is living with his Hindu parents, and they own – it's like we bought a zoo. They own a zoo in India. And they have decided at some point that there's some unrest in their country, and they need to move. So they've decided to move to Canada. So they've sold the zoo, but they get to keep all of the animals, and they're going to open a zoo down, or at least sell a lot of the animals in Canada to zoos there. So they hop on a freighter ship, this huge ship, with their giraffes and lions and tigers. And the footage at the beginning of this movie is unbelievable. We went and saw it in 3D, and to see these beautiful videos of these animals walking around that you've never even seen before, the most unique, beautiful imagery of these animals in this zoo are so spectacular, and to watch it in 3D is amazing. Anyway, so he hops on this ship, this freighter, with his family and a lot of the animals, and there's a storm. No reason why. They don't know why, but the ship sinks. And he had heard the storm and went out on the deck of the ship. And people were trying to get into lifeboats. Well, somehow the people that were in his lifeboat fell off of the lifeboat, and he ends up in this life raft by himself. As the lifeboat is leaving the ship, while the ship is going down, you know, he's distraught. His whole family is going down, and all the animals and everything, some animals swim to the boat. And the first thing that comes in the boat with him, jumps off the ship onto the boat, is a zebra. And then an orangutan swims to the ship. And then he thinks that there's a person swimming to the ship, so he sticks the oar out and is like, come on, out of here, stay, I'm going to save you. And up comes a tiger out of the water.
And that's not a spoiler alert. Because that's not a spoiler because you do see that in the previews, yeah.
Yeah, that's in the previews. So the whole movie is him on the ship with these animals and where they go and where they kind of the stuff that happens while he's on the ship and how he tries to survive and the amazing things that kind of happen when you're on a boat, like the flying fish go by and watching the tiger try to grab the fish. And it was just really, really amazing. And there's more, I talked about the religious undertones because there's more of a deeper meaning to the whole entire thing that I will not spoil for you. And you have to watch to get to the end of it and see kind of what all of it meant and to him. The whole perspective is a guy comes to find him in Canada because he wants to write a book. He's like, I've heard you have the greatest story to be told. And so he's being interviewed as an adult by this. That's kind of how the story is told. As he's looking back and he's recanting like the whole kind of adventure that he had.
Which is sort of what they did with Titanic. That's the same concept they did with the Titanic movie.
Yes, dramatically different than Titanic, though. So, but it's really, really good. And if you can, it is available. It's like $2 more to go to the 3D. Definitely. Chad and I hate 3D movies because we hate wearing the glasses. Totally worth it, though, especially for the animals. If you're an animal person, a horse person, to see these animals at the whole, like, first 20 minutes of the movie is them in the zoo and just the music that goes along with it. It was just really, really awesome. It's a really awesome movie. Even Chad liked it. And, you know, it's not like you don't leave that movie and go, oh, my God, it's my favorite movie ever. It's like you leave that movie and you're like, wow, I'm going to have to think about that for a couple of days. But it was beautiful. It's a beautiful story. And I loved the book and I loved the movie. And so I definitely think that go see it. Get yourself a little bit of class there, Glenn. You know, you always go see these ridiculous movies. And I think you need to go see something a little more artsy.
Uh-huh. Okay. Yeah, I went to see James Bond. What do you want? I'm not even a James Bond fan. Jennifer drugged me along to see the James Bond movie, and you know what? I thought this was the best James Bond movie ever. I thought it was great.
Oh,
maybe,
yeah.
Maybe because it was less James Bondy than usual, but I thought it was really good. How about the acting in this one?
Oh, like, the acting is... Oh, it's amazing. It's a guy on a boat. It's like Castaway. Like Chad said, it reminded him of Castaway. And
okay.
If you like that, imagine Tom Hanks and a tiger on the island.
Did he have a basketball? He didn't have a basketball.
He didn't have a volleyball, no. So
volleyball,
yeah. He's all by himself.
Okay.
But it was amazing, so I definitely recommend it. And as far as the James Bond movie goes, yeah, it was less, like, he didn't have, like, a bunch of toys and, like, Batman stuff. He was like, shirtless and jumping off trains, and he did his stunts. And
I noticed how you put
awesome.
Shirtless first.
Wait, did I say that out loud?
You know what I thought was interesting, too, about that one was, you're right, with the other ones were so over the top with the stunts and the stunt work and all that stuff that it was unbelievable. It was meant to be unbelievable, but this one just had, and he played a grittier sort of, you know, more down to earth, not as high class as Pierce Brosnan sort of played the high class, you know, $500 suit, Bond. He didn't play that. It was a completely different character. I think, came across completely differently.
You seen the first two with him in it?
No, we didn't, because I just hate James Bond. But now I might go back and watch him because
Yeah, no, definitely do, because I don't really – I've never liked James Bond either, and I like all three of these.
Casino Royale
is the first one, I think. And anyway, they're all very good, but definitely this one was the best one. Wait, it was way to start at the end, Glenn, and work your way back.
Well, that's terrific. I'm glad you liked it. I still don't know if I'm going to go see it, but I'm glad you liked it.
Well, then what was the point of me telling you how it was? If you're still like, I'm not going to go see it.
That's
you wouldn't go see it anyway.
The listeners, Andy Lovato was waiting. She said she's currently reading the book, and she can't wait to hear what Jamie says about the movie. So,
oh, well, if you're reading the book, you definitely have to go see the movie because it kind of brings it to life a little bit. So finish the book, and you'll be blown away, and you'll have to go see the movie.
And you're right about the 3D thing. Jennifer and I aren't real big fans of the 3D either, but there are certain movies I think it does help. But then
like
there are
Avatar.
Other movies.
This
like,
was like 3D Avatar-esque, you know, with the all, there was a lot of really amazing special effects that you should see, just beautiful moments that you should see in, with the review. I mean, with the movie. So go see it in 3D while you still can.
Very good. Well, thank you so much for that, Jamie. We're going to take a break here for a commercial from Equestrian Collections, and then we're going to come back and we're going to talk reining with Craig Johnson. We'll be right back. Glenn here from the Horse Radio Network, and I'm here with Debbie from Equestrian Collections. And Debbie, we're going to talk about a program you have that a lot of people don't know about.
That's right. You know what, Glenn? One of the biggest things people pull their hair out about with online shopping is the shipping. So we have come up with an idea where people can have unlimited shipping. They sign up for our unlimited shipping program. We have two options. The one-way program, where you have unlimited shipping one way, that is, if you order from us, all of your shipping is paid. That costs only $29.95 per year. And we also offer two-way shipping. Now, this is $49.95, and we not only pay for your shipping to you, but if you have a return, we pay for the shipping back to us. So for only $50 a year, you have unlimited free shipping coming and going to Equestrian Collections. So this is a program that is so user-friendly, and it is our customers just love it.
Well, you actually place an order every 2 months, and you've paid for this very easily.
Oh, gosh, yes. You can place one order and pay for it, especially, I mean, the one way is only $30, $29.95. It's a complete win-win situation for our customers and for us as well.
Sharon, on your website, on the comments section, posted, "This is a fantastic idea. Amazon Prime offers the same thing, and I always take advantage of it. I now purchase more frequently from Equestrian Collections because I save so much money on shipping costs."
Well, we love that, and thank you so much, Sharon. I did want to say that this does have a few stipulations. It's for continental United States only. It's unfortunately not at this time for our international customers. So I did want to make sure that they understood that.
So if you live in China, I'm sorry. But that's EquestrianCollections.com. You actually go to the homepage, and right down in the middle you'll see a banner ad about the unlimited shipping. Click on that, and you can go sign up today at EquestrianCollections.com. And, of course, Equestrian Collections is the place you can go right now. It's a place you can go right now for all of your holiday shopping needs as well. Well, it looks like our guest might be a little bit delayed here, Jamie. Craig might be a little bit, looks like around 9:45. So why don't we do some news in the meantime?
Okay.
You know how Great Britain had a great year? They had a great year all around. But the Olympics, they won a ton of medals, and you had Charlotte Desjardins, who won the double gold medal in the Olympics for dressage. You had the show jumping team that was gold medal as well, and they just had a fantastic year all around. Well, every year the BBC announces a sports personality of the year. Well, the athletes over there on the equestrian side were not real happy because of the short list for the BBC sports personality of the year, it did not contain a single equestrian. The 12 contenders had no equestrians. Now, and you know, I understand why they're upset about that. This was a fantastic year. Look how many medals the equestrians brought to Great Britain. The problem was that they had 29 gold medals, Great Britain did, and 34 if you add Paralympics into the mix. So they had a ton of excellent athletes this year. And I think that was, it just got watered down, I guess.
Well, you still have to give a nod to, like, as many sports as you can. So I don't have the numbers here, but do they have, like, repeated amount of swimmers or tennis players or something? Or is it just kind of a one of each?
You know, they kind of had a mixture. Andy Murray was in there, the tennis player, that bicyclist that everybody was talking about. Bradley Wiggins was in there, and, you know, who won the Tour de France this year and also, you know, was did really well in the Olympics. So I think they did spread it out. It's just that equestrian was not one of them. And it made him unhappy,
well,
and I can understand why.
Equestrians should revolt. What is this BBC Sports Personality of the Year shortlist? Who cares? We know, Charlotte, you're amazing. But they're not going to recognize dressage because it was the Colbert Nation sport of the summer, not Europe's sport of the summer.
Apparently, he still talks about it occasionally, dressage and Rofalka.
He does. He talks about Rofalka all the time. It's one of his favorite things. I watch the show all the time. Oh, it's good. Well, hey, just so you guys know, speaking of sports with animals, the FEI has now released that they are going to have to keep an eye on endurance. Apparently, in endurance racing, there has been an overabundance of doping cases. They've investigated in the year all the way up to November, 15 doping cases, 8 of them involved endurance riders. 7 of those were from the UAE, United Arab Emirates. There are a further 10 cases pending investigation right now. 9 of those are endurance. So that's kind of the sad thing is endurance has Paul Greenwood, the manager of the integrity unit, says endurance has grown so much in the past year and is now just behind jumping in terms of the number of events. And they say they focused so much on jumping in past years, they want to increase their profile in the endurance world. But there's a lot of people that are going to get in big trouble. You guys keep it clean. Come on, I don't care where are you from. But they're giving them, I guess, yeah, some of the UAE competitors were giving their horses bronchodilators, which is the drug that opens up their airways, and painkillers, you know, those kind of things, bupivacaine, before the competition. A 160-kilometer race. In February, a horse named Mandy was found to be positive for all of those things. So they're in big trouble.
Wow. And, you know, that's interesting that it is the UAE, and they, you know, they obviously have been doing really well recently in endurance. A lot of the Middle Eastern countries over there and African countries have been doing very well. So, you know, that's interesting. We'll see what happens with that now that they have their eye on it. Hey, if you're driving, do you have any toll roads in Arizona? Is that a big thing in Arizona, the toll roads?
Oh, let's see. You know, I don't think we do. I don't think we have any toll roads, but I know it's very prevalent on the East Coast, especially in the Northeast.
Yeah, especially in the Northeast, like New Jersey. Now, we have a lot of them in Florida here, too.
That's true.
We have that little sun pass. You know, you put it on your windshield, and you don't have to, you know, go through the little thing. Well, apparently 6 New Jersey horse owners have received $10,000 from the Delaware River Port Authority because they were regularly overcharged for towing their horses over the Commodore Barry Bridge. The bridge's Easy Pass equipment charged the owners $24 for each round trip with their trucks and animal trailers instead of the proper $10, so they filed a lawsuit in 2010. They won the lawsuit, and apparently, you know, their complaint of their attorney that said, look, this equipment is malfunctioning. It does not work, which is why it keeps overcharging these horse people. And apparently, you know, this attorney says, my clients go over the other bridges that are in the area, and it does not happen on the bridges. It does not happen on the New Jersey Turnpike. It does not happen on the George Washington Bridge, which goes over to Pennsylvania. There's something wrong with this bridge. Well, they won this lawsuit, but apparently it keeps charging people wrong. It charges them as if they were 18-wheel tractor-trailer trucks, if you have a horse trailer on it. And so now the bridge people are saying, oh, no, it's not wrong, it's just fine, and you know. But apparently it continues to do it. So what they're telling people now is if you're a horse person, take the Easy Pass thing off of your dash and actually put it in aluminum foil a foil pouch so that it doesn't pick up when you drive through. It doesn't automatically pick it up. And go through the actual people lane, because the people will charge you the right amount. But if you're going over this particular Commodore Barry Bridge, don't trust the Easy Pass system, because it will overcharge you.
Dang. $10,000 adding up, that is a lot of money. And so the Easy Pass is a road? Like, is it a ferry? I mean, I don't get it.
No. What happens with the Easy Pass, and same with the Sun Pass, boy, you have lived on the West Coast for a while. A lot of the tolls now, you just drive through at full speed, and you have this little thing that you put on your windshield, a little electronic thing.
Yeah.
And when you drive through, it picks up that you've gone through, and it automatically charges an account that you keep money in. Well, so what this has been doing is overcharging them as tractor trailers. And I guess it's not doing a good job of reading that this is a horse trailer instead of a tractor trailer.
I get it.
Yeah. So that's why it's doing it. But they don't have the problem on the other bridges. So what the lawyer is saying, hey, look, you obviously know this is a problem. You're not fixing it. So now the lawyer is getting a whole bunch of other horse people together and going to do a very large class action lawsuit. So he's not done yet.
Wow. My favorite line in the whole story at the end is the spokesman for the Department of Transportation says that Easy Pass systems operate similarly on all four bridges. I like how he chooses the word similarly.
Yeah, but not correctly.
Right.
He doesn't say it works correctly. He doesn't work the same. It works similarly. That's like saying a donkey is similar to a cow.
Yeah.
They're four legs.
They all charge you. They just charge you different amounts. So, anyway, if you're going through New Jersey, keep that in mind if you have Easy Pass. Well, let's do this. Let's take a break for our song, Jamie, and then let's come back with our guest here. He had something come up, and Jennifer said he'll be available in a few minutes. So let's take a break. Right after this word from Fleeceworks, we're going to hear we had Templeton Thompson on, who hosted on Monday's show, and we have another of her holiday songs for you today to get you in the mood. So we'll be right back after this.
And horse folks, I am here with Judy McSwain, owner of Fleeceworks. Judy, it gets very confusing because there's wool and there's fleece and there's fake wool and there's real wool, and the words all seem to blend together.
One of the things that happens here in the U.S. is people use the term fleece, and under that umbrella, there's actually three different categories. There's the artificial fleece, and then there's sheepskin, which is sheepskin. It's fleece on a hide. And then there's wool, which is where we take the fleece and we shear it off the sheep, and we blend it and weave it onto a cotton poly background. So there's actually, right off the bat, there's really three divisions underneath it. And acrylic is a fake stuff. What we do is we have the genuine sheepskin, and that's where it's on the hide. And then we have a new ferrowool, which we've shorn off and woven it, and it's on a cotton poly background. What's unique about us is Fleeceworks uses what we call Australian merino. And that's unique in that there's different types of merino. You're correct when you say that you think of a hunt coat. There's a merino Suffolk Cross. There's different merino, what we call hybrids. But the Australian merino sheep is the finest wool-producing sheep in the world. And then there's different types within there. And so with Australian, it's whether it's the climate or it's the years, it's the breeding, but it produces this just amazing, beautiful wool and sheepskin. And that's one of the things that Fleeceworks is noted for, is the softness of it. It's very fine sheepskin or very fine wool, but it's very dense. And because it's fine and dense, it allows it to be soft without being bulky.
Uh-huh.
So what you do is you get the balancing, the thermal balancing qualities without bulking up underneath your saddle.
So check them out today at fleeceworks.com. If you want a high-quality saddle pad that performs as advertised, hit them up.
A merry little Christmas. your heart be light. From now on, our troubles will be out of sight. Have yourself a merry little Christmas. Make the Yuletide gay. From now on, our troubles will be miles away. And here we happy golden days of yore. Faithful friends who are dear to us, gather near to us once more. Through the years, we all will be together. If the fates allow, hang a shining star upon the highest path, and have yourself a merry little Christmas now.
Well, that was Templeton Thompson with Have Yourself a Merry Little Christmas. You can find all of her music, including her holiday music, available right now at templetonthompson.com. You're listening to Horses in the Morning. I am Glenn here with Jamie and Coach Jen today, and we are speaking next to Rainer Craig Johnson. He's been he's well known in the reining world and has won a little bit of money along the way. It's something that gets Jamie every time when being an English rider, when we hear how much money they actually win on the reining side. But we have him on to talk about his life, about a program he has called Dirt, and we're going to get him on to talk about that right now. Good morning, Craig.
Good morning.
Thank you so much for joining us today, and we appreciate you being on.
It's my pleasure. I'm excited about it.
Well, Craig, now you actually grew up riding Western Pleasure and Halter and Trail and you know everything else you could do in the AQHA side of things. What drew you to reining? Why reining?
Well, the thing I liked about reining was it seemed to be the common denominator to everything. You know, reining to me is like they call or say about dressage in, on the English side is that it's a training method. And so reining is basically a training method that became a sport. It's all about going right, left, forward, and back better.
How long has reining actually been around? Do you know?
Reining has actually been around for a pretty good while. They've, you know, it was before it became an official sport within organizations. It was a competition between ranchers and trainers and horsemen that, you know, one guy would say, well, mine can turn better than yours, and the other guy would say, well, no, it can't, you know, or mine can stop better. And so, you know, there was always just this friendly little rivalry between, you know, guys and their horses. But, so the evolution actually has been just from, you know, competition between guys and what they thought they could get to their horses to do. But it's become an organized sport probably within the last 50 years, and the evolution has just been fantastic. Once the sport organized and became a real discipline, you know, within within associations, and then we developed the association itself for reining, then, of course, the breeding followed, too. You know, we started breeding for that kind of a horse. Before that happened, it was just, you know, ranch horses or a bell horse that was too slow or a pleasure horse that was too fast. You know, well, let's see what we can do with it. And but now the horses are bred specifically for this sport, and it's amazing what they can do.
Now, you touched on this, but reining's popularity has just skyrocketed across not just in the United States, but across the world, especially in Europe and Italy. I mean, it is just taken off.
Yeah, it's gotten fantastic. It's a very big thing in Europe, Australia as well. In Asia now, it's developing there. We've even gone to Russia and done clinics. It's in South Africa. So it's, but what they're finding is the same thing that I discovered about the sport years ago, is that it was, it's just a fantastic way to train a horse. So in a lot of these countries, they're, you know, first experiencing it as training method. And then they go, wow, that's fun. Look, my horse can do that. Let's compete in the sport too.
Are they using their own native horses in some cases, or are they bringing quarter horses over? What are they doing as far as horses are concerned overseas?
Well, a lot of countries like Brazil, they have a horse called a Crioula that is a fantastic reining horse. They're just sturdy little horses that can, you know, they can stop in a rock pile. They're just amazing. And it seems like each country. In fact, I did a clinic in Norway, and they have their own horses there, you know, own style of horses, and gosh, some of those were making wonderful reining horses. And a lot of the countries do then start importing and working on their breeding, just like we've been doing here for, you know, a number of years now, and trying to improve the sport within our own country, and they're doing that as well. I think Italy and Germany have kind of led the way as far as, you know, importing of horses and, you know, really big-time horses. And, I could foresee someday in the future where we may actually have to go there to get the good ones. You know, they're taking over a lot of the nice horses from here.
One of the things I mentioned earlier, Jamie, my co-host, every time we talk about reining, we talk about the money that has actually come into the sport as well, and the popularity for audiences and that kind of thing, which has brought the dollars into the sport. Can you win money in this sport at the lower levels? Or, you know, we always hear about the million-dollar riders, and we've had them on the show here. But, you know, is there money in the lower? Can you pay your bills in the lower
end? You can pay your bills, yeah. And, and at the lower levels, that's really all they want is, just the ability to pay their bills. Now, usually at the lower levels, these people are, you know, this is their recreation. They have a reining horse instead of a boat, you know.
Right.
And they wouldn't expect to make money with their boat, you know. And yet, so they're out on the weekends and having fun and enjoying the camaraderie of the discipline and the people that are there, and it's a great group of people. But yet, they're, sure, there is money added. It's not a lot, but yet at the lower levels, they don't really want a lot of money added because the way our system works, as you begin to win money, the dollar amounts are accumulated, and then as you win a certain amount, you move up to the next level, and then the next level, and the next level, and they don't want to win so much so fast that they actually win their way out of their comfort zone.
Okay, I see. And that's all, and that's all tracked by the Reining Association, right? All your dollar winnings and everything.
Yeah.
Okay. And is that tracked by the rider or by the horse?
It's by the rider. We also keep a record of horse earnings as well. You know, and we've got horses that have won, well over $500,000 now, and you know, actually over $600,000 on one horse, and you know, so that's really cool. We didn't see that happening, you know, 20 years ago. And, you know, riders now, there's, I think there's 14 or 15 riders that have won over $1 million now, and one guy's, you know, at $4 million, and it's pretty exciting.
Okay, I have a question for you.
Go ahead.
Craig, let me ask you here, because I'm going to take some notes, and I'm going to write some stuff down. Being an English rider, an inventor, where is this money coming from, my friend?
It is coming through nominations of horses, breeder incentives. It is coming from sponsors. We have some fantastic sponsors within the association. Also, just the size of the sport. You know, we have ratings all over the country and all over the world, and certain percentages, you know, as in any group, go back to the association as far as the entry fees and things. So those are all, you know, everything's accumulated, plus the entry fees that are put in. You know, if, for example, we're here at the National Reining Fraternity, and I think there's 600 horses in the Reining Fraternity this year.
Yeah.
And, you know, and each paid $2,000 to be in, and plus our, you know, the nomination system and everything. This year, it was a guaranteed purse or a guaranteed win of $150,000. It turns out it's going to be better than that. It's going to pay $165,000 to win. And then I think second is like $140,000 or something. So we pay really deep.
Wow.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Now, so a lot of times these people will enter for their $2,000 entry fee, and they can, I mean, you don't pay for last. So there are a lot of people that walk away with no money. So see, Glenn, it all evens out. I don't spend $2,000 on an entry fee, so you need to leave me alone about being broke.
Right. Well, there's going to be a lot of people here that will leave with that, you know. But they took their chance, you know. You're just kind of taking part in the dream.
Well, now tell us if somebody wants to...
If somebody
wants to get started in reining, Craig, and you have a program called Do It Yourself Reining Training or DIRT. Tell us about that. What is the best way to get started if somebody's, you know, just at the very beginning of doing this? You know, I have a horse who might be good at it. What do I do?
Well, you just take the horse you have and begin to have some fun with it and start to, you know, kind of imagine the possibilities, and that's what the DIRT is about. DIRT is acronym for Do It Yourself Reining Training, DIYRT. And so what you get with that is we have videos that show you, you know, reining at different levels, you know, which it gives you a place to start. Plus, it also, I think it's important that people see what you, you know, could hope to attain someday in the future. And but at the beginning levels, it's really quite fun. It's about teaching your horse to be responsible for its feet and circling correctly, you know, and reining itself is based on, you know, footwork and mental focus and connection to the rider. And so there's exercises we give you to create higher levels of that. And people find it fascinating to, you know, discover the ultimate connection they can get with their horse through using some of these basics and fundamentals.
And they can find that at your website at craigjohnsonreining.com, correct?
Yes, they can.
Very good. Hey, you know, we got to you through Stable Comfort by ProMat. You know, can you tell us about your experience with Stable Comfort and what they've done with your stalls?
Sure, that's a fantastic product. We built a brand new facility and helped create it. We thought, okay, now that we can start from the ground up and just make this the ultimate place, what would we do, you know, that not only is good for the people, but what can we do to make our horses more comfortable and feel better and stay sounder and be happier, and stable comfort just seemed like an obvious way to go. And we put that system in the barn, and it's just been fantastic. A lot of the horses do stay stabled in the stalls, and that's, you know, one of the reasons is because of the shoes that they wear for the sport, you know, the sliding plates. And certainly in the winter, you wouldn't turn them out with sliding plates on. They'd be slipping and falling down all over the place. And then during the year, too, they run the risk of slipping and sliding around unless you have, you know, even groomed turnouts. So, they spend a good bit of time in stalls. And so given that, we sure wanted them to be comfortable. And the one thing I've seen with stable comfort is that our horses, they lay down a lot. And that's actually quite good for them. You know, they rest and they relax. And you can walk down through the barn aisle and you can tell these horses are just, they're relaxed and happy and they're absolutely comfortable. And it's fun for the people, too, to walk in on the stall in the stalls and go, wow, you know, this is fantastic. I'd sleep here.
It's really like sleeping on it's really like a mattress for a horse rather than a hard floor with some rubber over top of it. And now the other thing that that they claim is that you do save bedding as well because of the whole system and the way the matting actually runs up to the walls and everything. Have you found that as well?
We have found that as well. We don't waste near as much bedding. We still like to bed ours well. Even on the stable comfort, we find that's just a double bonus, you know. But yet, even though we probably use a little more bedding than even they say we need to, we do, but yet we don't change it as much. And we don't have to add to it all the time either, you know, so because we're just not wasting it. And it's easy to clean up. It's easy to pick out the wet spots. It's just fantastic. And so, yes, though we start with a little more sawdust than some, we don't use any more than anybody else.
Ammonia smell? You don't have that horrible ammonia smell when the urine gets down
no,
underneath
really
the mats
don't,
and
because,
stinks the place up?
Yeah. Well, it's not in the dirt anymore because, that ammonia can't get to the dirt and it become part of the facility. So it's fantastic. It cleans out every day.
Very good. Well, very good. Well, we appreciate Stable Comfort putting us in contact with you. That's stablecomfort.com if you want to check out how that system works. And if you want to learn more about reining or if you want to get a hold of Craig, it's craigjohnsonreining.com. Thank you very much, Craig. We appreciate you being on.
Been my pleasure. Thank you.
You must have one of those rescue horses out there in Arizona that would be good at reining.
You know, I think most of my rescue horses couldn't do a spin to save their lives. Because like you were saying, about learning where their feet are, no. Especially little Joey. That guy can't even turn around to get it to his feed bucket without tripping.
It is fun to watch. We got to see, of course, the best of the best at the World Equestrian Games in reining, and I spent a lot of time up there. Freestyle reining is an absolute blast because it's just like freestyle dressage. They put music to it and they can do whatever they want. It is a lot of fun, a heck of a lot of fun. Well, thank you, Craig, for joining us. We really appreciate that. We're coming up next with thehorse.com, but first I got to tell you, one of the sponsors we have for thehorse.com is Dr. Rose's. And, Janie, do you guys have fire ants, or is that a unique thing we have here in Florida?
No, dude, fire ants invade the world. That is one thing that if the world were to end, like Cormac McCarthy's The Road were to happen, and it was apocalypse happened, there's nothing, there'd be fire ants.
Well, I'll tell you what, we didn't have them, you know, obviously in Kentucky, we didn't have fire ants like we do here in Florida. And we have them around the farm here, and Beaker has avoided them. When he lays down, I always said, you know, one of these days he's going to lay down a fire ant nest, and they're going to just bite the hell out of him, and we're going to have to deal with that. Well, it happened. Last week he came out, and his whole chest area was covered in bites, and anybody that's been bit by a fire ant, it hurts. That spot itches and hurts for 2 weeks. literally 2 weeks, and you get pussy and it's scabby and everything. Well, we said, let's try Dr. Rose's. So we put Dr. Rose's remedy on it, and I'm telling you, within a couple of days, they were healed up. It really, really does work. You know, Dr. Rose's skin treatment, salve, and spray are all natural products, which are anti-inflammatory, antiviral, antifungal, antiseptic, and anti-scarring, and that's what we're seeing with the healing on these fire ant bites. It does promote the healing of rashes and inflammation or these kind of bites. It really did work very well. So we were glad we had the Dr. Roses around to use it. Now, I hope he learned his lesson and can kind of spot where the mounds are from now on, or he's going to continue doing that. You know, it's very effective at treating rain rot as well and abrasions, all kinds of things like that. If it involves the skin, it's really good at treating it. So if you want to check out more about Dr. Rose's, go to drrosesremedies.com. If you see it at your local tack shop, pick up a bottle, pick up a jar of it, and you don't need much. That's the one thing. This stuff will last you forever. So pick it up and give it a try for anything like that. We know Beaker will tell you it works. He's feeling a lot better about his fire ant bites now that we put some Dr. Rose's on it. Very good. Jamie, you're up with the horse. Let me play the bumper.
Do it.
The horse health report is coming to town. When you turn him out, you'd best keep him dry. In case you have doubt, I'm telling you why. The horse health report is coming to town. You're getting the gist. Don't roll the dice. Check water buckets. Check them twice. Because the horse health report is coming to town.
I'm going to call BS on that bumper. Let me just jump in real quick. Jennifer, if you're going to make something like that, you have to sing it. Without a doubt. You can't just read it. Total crap. What a cop-out.
I will send that to you, and you can sing it.
I didn't say I wanted to be involved. Okay? Just you do it.
We'll take volunteers.
Yeah, exactly. We'll do a listener contest. Sounds good to me. All right, well, we've got thehorse.com as we do every Wednesday, and we've got Michelle. And hello, Michelle, and hello, Dr. Jones.
Good morning.
Dr. Jones.
Do we have Dr. Jones there?
Hello.
There she is.
Good morning, everybody.
Hi. So this morning we're going to be talking about blind horses. And if you look at your November issue of The Horse, we have a great article in there about what causes horses to go blind and some great options for caring for them. And so, Dr. Jones, can you fill us in a little bit about what the most common causes of blindness are?
Well, it appears to be like a uveitis. It can come in major different forms. Moon blindness is the most popular. Everybody seems to know about basically what they call recurrent uveitis, seen primarily in Appaloosas. Those tend to take, let's say, a middle-aged horse sight away, and it's not usually an aged horse at that time. And it's a slow progression to complete loss of sight. And then there's, of course, trauma. Trauma can occur to loss of sight. But those are your primary culprits to the horses going blind. There's a few strange ones that are out there. But
yes,
but those
before
are the primary
you move on.
Ones.
Yeah, so uveitis, moon blindness. I've always heard moon blindness, and I thought when I was a kid, like they were, I didn't quite understand what moon blindness meant. So can you explain what is moon blindness and why is it called moon blindness?
Well, I'll certainly tell you it's not from looking at the moon. As if your parents told you, don't look at the sun, you'll go blind if you look at the sun. It's not, looking at the moon. So don't worry about your horses being turned out at night because you want to save their color, and now you got to worry about them becoming moon blind because they stared at the moon too long, especially now with the full moon. So, no, it's seen primarily, like I said, in Appaloosas, and they tend to have a disease process that slowly infiltrates the anterior chamber, I'm trying to bring this down, sorry, that causes inflammation within the eye itself and clouding of the eye. That's what you'll see as you're as an owner. And it's kind of starting to, they start to kind of look through like a frosty lens, like those frosted windows that you have in your bathroom, so you can't quite see all the way in there, but you can see outlines, and then slowly progresses to complete blindness.
And it shouldn't be confused with night blindness, because I've known people who've been confused by that, also thinking moon blindness is the same as being night blind, and that's not necessarily the case, right?
Good point. Very good point. Okay.
So when our horses do go blind, and I haven't had one with a sight issue. I've had eye injuries, which could have turned out really ugly, but I haven't had a blind horse to manage. But I've seen, like, there was a horse at the Olympics, a Swedish horse named Santana, a Hanoverian stallion that competed in dressage. So can horses that are partially blind or fully blind still work?
Absolutely. There are some rules in some of the USEF disciplines that do not allow a blind horse to ride, be ridden, and that's for safety reasons, and that would be jumping and such. But the horses still can work. There is another one besides the one you're speaking of that Dr. Brooks at the University of Florida always shows the video of this horse doing its dressage test. And it's an upper-level dressage Dutch warm blood that went completely blind at age 6. And he calls it his disaster case that he never corrected, and where he failed at his best. he felt like he didn't do his best job, but he could keep the horse from going blind. He continually kept coming in, found out it probably was some sort of autoimmune disease is all they could deduce it to be. And she left when he was completely blind. And he says, so what are you going to do with him? She said, well, he's not lame. I'm going to ride him. And so she has been riding this horse in dressage and does very well. And he's bilaterally blind.
So we put a poll up on thehorse.com earlier this month asking our visitors to the site if they've ever managed a horse that was blind. And I was really surprised. We had a good turnout in people voting, and almost 70% of the respondents had a blind horse at some point. And if you go on which really surprised me. And if you go onto our website, we compiled some of people's responses and tips and thoughts about having blind horses. And it's article 30919. And you can look on there. I just thought people had some really great things to say about taking care of these horses that are compromised, but it often can go on and still work for us a little bit and enjoy life. But when things don't go well, how do you know that a horse isn't going to be successful without its sight? Is that a nice way to say that?
Well, yeah. I think what you're leading into is reaching your expectations as the owner. And I think your 70% that responded are very special people, because it takes very special people to manage blind horses. And if you're not that special person and you have a horse that's probably going blind, you may want to consider, you know, adopting that horse out. There's no way you'll be able to sell it, but finding a better home for it than what you're planning on doing, because it does take quite a bit of patience and understanding to deal with those horses. They usually go blind gradually, because the uveitis cases, which are the, you know, primary ones for blindness, they are a slow progression of losing their sight. They don't, you know, have their sight one day and the next day they're completely blind. It's over a few years. And as you will notice, you'll see your horse starting to get hurt in the paddock that it's always been living in, and spooking at, you know, things that normally it wouldn't spook at, crashing in the walls, stepping on top of you, just other behavior changes that are very abnormal for your horse. And at that point, you know, you need to get at least your baseline evaluation by your veterinarian, and then maybe step it up a notch to an ophthalmologist who has a bit more education and more tools to use to evaluate the eye to see what the problem actually is. I know people who have trail rided these horses, but they trail ride with their pasture mates. They ride in the trailer with their pasture mates. So, again, it takes a very particular person who is willing to help these horses through this time. Trauma, usually it's not a bilateral, meaning both eyes. Trauma is usually one eye. It's a stromal abscess that went bad. It's object that perforated the eye. Whatever the reason, the eye had to be removed. And or they went blind and the eye is comfortable enough to stay in. Usually it's removed. Those horses will do well as long as everything's approached and done by the side that they can see. But again, a special person needs to understand that. And they can be ridden, but you have to ride them with the understanding that the side they have no eye on is their weak side.
So,
now, Dr. Jones, Michelle, let me jump in here.
Okay.
You talk about the horses that are weak-sided with the one eye. I had a horse that we rescued. He was somewhere between 25 and 30 when we got him. And
wow.
The long story short was, oh, my God, this horse has, like, something. He looked like slime. Okay, like, at some point, his eye, he had been hit in the side of the head. The whole, like, half of the skull had been fractured, and the eye socket was actually, like, 2 inches lower, and he still had his eye in it. Now, obviously completely blind. Well, bless his little heart, he turned out to be the greatest little lesson pony for kids. These small kids would get on him, and he'd just gently jog around. That super great horse. Well, we had a Halloween horse show where we had the kids in costumes and we played Western games such as barrel racing, pole bending, these kinds of things. And, you know, I was like, just take Will out there and just see what he can do. You know, just be kind of aware. We're always very aware of his right side. Well, they take him to the start line for the pole bending, and girlfriend, you have never seen a horse launch into a pole bending run like this. The 30-year-old horse went down, made this spin turn, did flying lead changes in between every one of the poles. Boom, 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 boom. Left, spun back around, went down. This child is holding on for dear life, trying not to fall off the back of this horse who is flying through a pole bending with one eye that's decent. Okay, it wasn't even a good eye. It was a decent eye. So tell me that horse
wow.
did not at some point have some pole bending in his history, and he knew it.
Wow.
I mean,
I was going to say, he was telling you a little bit of his life story there.
I mean, it was amazing. He set the record for the time that it was ever at this horse show. We're like, he's 30. But he just hunkered down and did it. So even though they may have one eye or they may have some previous blindness, they don't forget stuff. I mean, that was like such an eye-opening day to me, no pun intended, that this horse and what horses can recall and how they can come back to like their past and bring up something that excited him. Nothing excited this horse except for pole bending.
Well, I'm glad he got a chance to try it again.
Yeah, it was really
sounds
cool.
Like
so they do recall everything, and you know, if you try to tell that horse that because he had one eye, he was, you know, we had to take it easy. He was like, no thanks, it's good. I'm good. Let's go.
So I think Dr. Jones, you have some tips that you wanted to share with the listeners about managing their blind horses.
Yeah. First off, there is a organization, and I cannot. Ever since you said we were going to talk about blind horses, the name has escaped me, and my go-to person is out of the office. I'm not able to get in touch with her. She's probably getting ready for AAP. She's going to be our new president this year, and she's the one that told me about this blind horse rescue facility. And I want to say it's out west, and they take in blind horses. So that's another option for your, you know, what do you do with them at that point kind of thing. I just cannot think of the association. It's escaping me. Maybe by next week I'll have it. While we're at AAP, I can mention it on the radio.
Instead of padded walls, they had padded fences all the way around.
Right.
Good fences. You do have to have good fences for these guys.
That's the number one tip, is you want to blind-proof the environment. You know, tape up bucket handle hooks, make openings to their stalls or their run-in sheds bigger. Don't make it just the door. Make it a bigger opening. Of course, if you have them in the same environment they've always been in, that's the best thing to do.
My horses can see, and they still need all that stuff padded.
Exactly. Now, the other thing is, and this is hard for the show people, is don't clip the whiskers on the muzzle. They're using that for sensing things, and you don't think about that, but they're using that to figure out where the ground is when they're going down to graze. So you don't want to clip their whiskers off. Encourage them to touch the fences and the gates and know where the water is when you first take them out. Talk to them often. That's the big thing. We always do that when we go out and get our little blind pony. We have one that she lost her one eye, and she's got heavy cataracts in the other. And it's just a certain angle she can see us. We talk to her the whole time we're going out to the pasture to get her. Loading, if you're going to be trailering a horse, practice getting on and off a ramp is best to use rather than the step-up. Unless they're only used to step-ups, then you're probably just fine. Again, going back to the pole bending, they do what they know what they can do. You want to keep an eye on how they're getting along with the other animals. If there's a bully in the group, pull them out, pull the bully out of that group, leave them with, you know, a more gentle pasture mate. You may want to add a bell to that pasture mate so they know where that pasture mate is. Do any changes to the environment slowly. So if you're going to move the water, make sure that, you know, you move it down, inch it down a little bit at a time so that they can go back to the same place for their water, because you don't want them to not be able to drink water. If you have one that's blind on only one side, always approach from that side. It makes common sense, I know, but it's just good to reiterate that. If they're blind on both, make sure that you're always touching and brushing them on both sides. They're used to being touched and brushed on both sides because you don't want them to be alarmed and bolt or anything to that effect. The broodmares. You can have blind broodmares. You just have to put a bell on the halter of the foal for the first few weeks of life so they don't frantically worry about where their baby is. They can hear that baby. And I would do it as soon as that baby is delivered. And then, of course, spoiling them. Please don't ever spoil your blind horse. That's never a good idea for any horse. But you need to set your limitations and, you know, dote on them a little bit more than your regular horses so that they know that they're in a safe environment.
Well, thank you, Dr. Jones. And one more thing that I thought was interesting in the article that we ran in the November issue was to not have electric fences or hot fences that your horses might touch, and that's something I hadn't thought about, is that your blind horse might hit those fences and get panicked. So that's another tip. So, well, thank you, Dr. Jones, for joining us. And for anyone who wants more information about taking care of a blind horse, there's that November issue. Also, if you're interested in the story about Santana, the one-eyed dressage horse at the Olympics, I have an article number for everyone. It's 29543. It's just a really interesting story about that horse competing at that level after an injury.
Very good, very good. I think this is very good education for everybody, and I do think that everybody can have their own blind horse, unfortunately, and they can still use the horse, but unfortunately they have to realize they just have to spend a little extra time with them.
Okay. Yeah, so it's not over for them is what you're saying. So these are all great advice, pieces of advice. So thank you guys so very much. Got Michelle Anderson from thehorse.com and Dr. Jones from Florida Equine. If you guys have any questions, you can find them, either one of them, on Facebook, or you can go to floridaequine.com or thehorse.com to contact Michelle. Thank you guys so much, and we will talk to you again next week.
Thank you.
Take care.
All right, bye, y'all.
And I thought that 70% number was really high, but then I got to thinking back, and Jennifer can help me jog my memory, but we've had horses that have been blind in one eye before. So, yeah, maybe that's not so
high. There's a horse out here, his name is Miles, and he has one eye and he runs prelim eventing. So,
oh, wow.
You know, yeah, I mean, just an amazing, amazing horse. And I just really think that, like, my horse, Will, they just get used to it, especially if they only have one eye. I mean, if they're blind, obviously it takes a lot more getting used to, I would imagine. But like they say, your other senses heighten when you're blind, and that's got to happen to horses too.
Yeah, you would think so. Well, very good. Don't forget that Friday, we're going to be back on Friday live here at 9 a.m. Eastern at Horses in the Morning. And, of course, it's Really Bad Ads time on Friday, so get your Really Bad Ads into Jennifer at horseradionetwork.com. There's a Redmond Rock gift pack, including one of the Rocks on a Rope. Their new products are going to be heading out to the winner, so get your ads in today. And I was trying to think there was something else I wanted to say, and I forgot what it is. So it can wait till Friday.
I guess so. Must have been really important.
Must have been.
All right, everybody. Have a great day. I'll post the photo of the ultrasound if I find out what it is.
Oh, and you guys
have to guess, and I'll tell you on Friday. So have a great day, spay, neuter, and geld.
We'll see you, everybody. I'm guessing it's a girl. That's my prediction.
Really? You're predicting girl? Okay.
Girl.
Chad is going to be mad at you. As long as it's healthy.